I came to sports writing in terms of books very, very late, and I never expected to win one. I was flabbergasted. What it does for your sale and what it does for your profile and what it does for your confidence as a writer, everybody must get the same kind of rush, really.
Hi, it is that time of week again. Time for the latest William Hill Sports Book of the Year 2020 podcast. Now, I know I say every week that this is a big one. We have got a big one for you this week. I really think you're going to enjoy our podcast. Incidentally, the voice you just heard, one of our previous winners, in fact, a titan of this award. It was Duncan Hamilton, who followers of the award will know, is our only three-time winner. He won in 2007 for Provided You Don't Kiss Me, 20 years with Brian Clough, and that always comes up as people's favourite previous winner. 2009, he won for Harold Larwood, his biography of that great cricketer. And then 2019, The Great Romantic, which was the story of Neville Cardus. Now, as you know, these podcasts, we are talking to the shortlisted writers and our judges, and we have now reached number four on our shortlist. So if you've missed the previous three shortlisted books, you can still find them on our feed, so you can download them there. But I'd recommend hitting subscribe. That way you won't miss any future episodes, and there's some great chats coming up, so I'd really recommend doing that. Okay, let's get on to this week's shortlisted writer, and it is Ian Ridley for his book The Breath of Sadness on Love, Grief and Cricket. The story of this book, well, let's read from the blurb itself. When Ian's wife, the trailblazing sports reporter Vicky Orvice, died of cancer at the age of 56. He found himself plunged deep into a sadness that he expected and a world of madness that he did not. In an attempt to make sense of it all and seek some solace from the brutality of his grief and anxiety, he embarked on a summer of watching county cricket, reliving bittersweet memories in places that he and Vicky had been to and visited together. He alternately is unnerved and consoled by the ebbs and flows of his mourning. But gradually, against a backdrop of the county championship's peace and solitude, with the sun on his back and tea, cake and the crossword at his side, he finds a way to survive the rhythms and cadences of his grief. If you've listened to previous episodes, you already know how I feel about this book. Let's hear my chat with Ian Ridley. An outstanding, outstanding book, The Breath of Sadness. And there are so many things I want to get into in this chat. But obviously, people who are listening to this podcast, there's going to be a good chunk of them who've not read the book, so don't know what it's about. So let me ask you the most obvious question first. Tell us what this book is about. What are we encountering when we open?
Well, it's a book on love, grief and cricket, which is the subtitle, really. I lost my wife, Vicky Orvice, in February of 2019. In a nutshell, I took myself off to watch county cricket for the summer, being at a loose end and on a recommendation. And towards the end of the summer, having started to take notes, a book formed, really. And it's a three-pronged book in the sense that it's about Vicky. I wanted the world to know what an amazing woman Vicky was. I wanted to try and process my own grief through the writing process, because writing is what I do. And I also thought that it might help others. And one of the most astonishing things, really, since the book has come out in this terrible year of 2020 is how many people that it has actually resonated with. So that's kind of, in a very short paragraph, what the book is about, really.
It is. And listen, we're going to come on to how I obviously, you didn't know as you were writing this book, Ian, how the kind of year we were going to all have in 2020. And I struggle to think of any book I've read this year that has better illustrated how this year has felt than this book. Let's talk first then. You mentioned there were three prongs to this book. Let's first talk about Vicky. Now, if you're a fan of sports writing, if you're a fan of sports, you will at some point have read Vicky's words. But for those who perhaps aren't familiar with her career, just give us an idea of Vicky's impact in the world of sport.
Yeah, well, Vicky was a young lass from Sheffield, born in 1962. She was an only child, and her father was a big Sheffield United fan, so took her to Bramall Lane. And she fell in love with the Blades, and particularly Tony Curry. It was that era. And then when she was about 12, she saw Johan Cruyff playing for Holland in the 1974 World Cup, developed a lifelong fondness for the colour orange and a crush on Johan Cruyff for the rest of her life. And in her study, there is an autograph of Johan Cruyff next to his picture when she interviewed him once. I once actually interviewed him for The Guardian, and he nicked cigarettes off me at the time when we both... when we both smoke, so that's my kind of one of my claims to fame. I could write a piece actually about football people that have stolen cigarettes off me for that, but that's for another day. And then Vicky decided she wanted to be a football writer. And through her teens, she wanted to be a journalist first off. She was passionate about journalism, and she went to Leicester University, did an English degree, started on the Wakefield Express, then went to the Western Daily Press in Bristol, and then got shifts on the Mail and the Observer from there. And in 1995, the Mail used to let her cover football on a Saturday. She was actually consumer affairs correspondent. She was a news reporter, consumer affairs correspondent at the Mail. They gave her a staff job. And then in 1995, Paul Ridley took her on as the first female football journalist on the staff of a tabloid newspaper, on The Sun. And that's really where her career began in national sports writing, really. In 2000, she was made athletics correspondent. Over the next 20 years, would cover five Olympic Games. Her contacts book was amazing. You know, at her funeral, we had Paula Radcliffe, Dina Asher-Smith, Adam Jamili, a whole host of sports stars. Jess Ennis came, Tony Adams, Alan Smith from Arsenal. So we had a bunch of people. Seb Coe sent a eulogy. So she was well respected in her profession.
And I have to say, I ran into Vicky once when I was, I just started at Five Live, and it was just before the Athens Olympics in 2004, and the Team GB had a training base in Cyprus, and so I went on a sort of press trip with a lot of others, and she stood out there, and she was very kind to me in helping me out, and I've never forgotten that. But I doubt if Vicky were here now with us talking, I doubt she'd remember me from that trip. And I remember her mainly because she was the only woman on that trip. Now, this was, as I say, this was over 15 years ago. My instinct is if we were to do that trip again tomorrow, obviously we can't at the moment because of COVID, but if we were to be doing that trip now, there'd be more female reporters. But I want us to just concentrate just briefly on the fact that she was unusual in that. There were very few female reporters in sport.
Funnily enough, Matt, my memory of sports journalism in the early 90s is that there were a lot of women around, you know, people like Sue Mott, Kate Battersby. You know, there were a lot of good female sports writers out there. But in many ways, it's got worse. A lot of women these days go into broadcasting and TV. That's more it. Vicky was always trying to get more women to take up the written press, even though now, obviously, its demise is becoming a little more rapid, you know, certainly in terms of the printed press. But you're right. I mean, she was a rarity. She did stand out. That's why everybody called her a trailblazer. And, I mean, the reaction to her death took me by surprise, and I think it would have taken Vicky by surprise. You know, the amount... I can remember a week before she died, she asked me to she knew she was going, and she said, look, put something on Facebook and Twitter, because otherwise you'll get so many calls and you won't be able to answer them and all that from friends and in journalism. And And I did, and I tweeted, that's where the title of the book came from. Those Who Feel the Breath of Sadness Sit Down Next to Me. It's a song by James. And, of course, I got 20,000 retweets. I got 7,500 likes, 1,500 replies, including one from Tim Booth, the lead singer of James. It was astonishing, and all sorts of sports people were. And the thing about it's very interesting, Matt, and you've said some very kind things about this book over the last 3 months, and I've been very, very grateful. Vicky was very helpful to a lot of people. And, you know, that was shown in the fact that she gave so much back. She was one of the founders of Women in Football. She really did try hard to help other women. She always believed, I don't know who said it, but she would often cite it, you know, there's a special place reserved in hell for women that don't help other women. And she was determined not to go to that place. So she was very helpful. And she was very helpful to young journalists. You know, Andy Bull wrote a wonderful piece for The Guardian a couple of weeks ago in which he said that Vicky had been very helpful to him in the run-up as a sort of new athletics writer, run-up to London 2012. She was that kind of, you know, journalist. She was generous.
I think why I've struggled many times as I've read the book. I read the book earlier this summer. In fact, we're talking now just as Britain is going into a second lockdown, and I have in my head that I read this book very early into the first lockdown. And I've been trying to think over the last few days ahead of this interview about why this book resonated with me so strongly. And speaking very personally, there is a friend of mine whose wife died of secondary cancer during this whole lockdown. And I think that was fresh in my mind as I was reading your book. And I want to come to a point that you've touched on already, which is the sheer number of people who've been in contact with you, who've read the book, who've been touched by it. And I would make the argument they've been touched by it because of this extraordinary year in which we find ourselves.
Yes, I'm sure there's a large element of that. You know, everyone has known loss in some form, loss and abandonment in some form, and it's particularly prevalent this year. You know, we all know somebody, even in the little village where I live, you know, we all know somebody that has left us, hastened by the virus, perhaps, or by, you know, one of the excess deaths that this year has thrown up. And it's one of those, I think it's one of those word of mouth books, you know, when I first sat down to write it over I mean, I'll tell you the background to the book, if you like, Matt, and how I came to do it. I had no intention of writing a book. In the months after Vicky died, I could not do anything. I could not put a coherent sentence together. And I did not know what to do with my life. And I had a very good therapist whose name is Bruce and is mentioned several times in the book. And he sees lots of people that would be quite well known in the public eye, but he's very low profile. And he said, what are you going to do for the summer? I said, I don't know. And I have to be honest here, my cancer came back in the April. I write about this in the book. At first, I wasn't going to talk about it, but my cancer came back in the April and it had spread a little. I have a prostate cancer that is now in my lymph nodes. And I said to Bruce, do you know what? I can't keep feeling this sad. I'm going to, I think I might turn down the treatment if they offer me a new treatment and let the illness take its course. And he said, well, it was the beginning of April. He said, why don't you just give it the cricket season and see how you feel at the end of it? And I suddenly thought, you know what, I might go and watch some cricket this summer. I thought when I retired, I'd spend these glorious days going to sit and watch county cricket and doing crosswords and eating tea and cake and it would be lovely and all the rest of it. So that's when I started. And I started at Hove on the opening day, Sussex v Leicestershire. I went to places that Vicky and I had been to that meant something for us. I didn't realise there is a thing in grief called pilgrimage. People are drawn back to places where they've been with their lost one. So I went to Sussex v Leicestershire. Vicky had been a student at Leicester University. We'd loved Brighton. We'd been there many times. And I invited Paul Hayward, the well-known sports writer, for lunch on the first day. And we sat and we talked and he knew Vicky well. He said, you know what, you should write a book. And I said, it would be a bit raw, Paul, and it might be a bit too candid for people. And he said, well, I'd read a book like that. And I thought no more about it. And then a website called Tortoise asked me to write a long piece for them about Vicky, which I did. An editor called Keith Blackmore, superb guy, former deputy editor of the Times. And I wrote 5,000 words for them. It got picked up by the Sunday Times and then the Sun. And the feedback, again, was astonishing. And I thought, maybe people do want to read about this. Because I'd read books about the sadness of grief. I was going mad at times. And I hadn't read a book about the madness of grief. And since I've written about it, so many people have identified with it. But I hadn't read a book about it, apart from maybe Joan Didion, who came closest in the year of magical thinking. That's what I did. I started making notes during the summer, little observations. And come the autumn, when the weather turned, and I thought, I've got nothing to do this winter, I started writing. And suddenly it came. And held together. So that's kind of how it happened. And that was long before lockdown. That was long before the virus kind of became the overwhelming event in our lives.
I think I'm so happy you brought up that encounter with Paul Hayward, because when I've recommended this book to people, that's the sequence I mention. Because it's not a sort of a big sort of pivot in the book, but the reason why it resonated with me is, here is a guy who you've gone to this cricket match at Hove. Paul's clearly not there to cover the cricket match. He's there to talk to you, but he's got a match he needs to prepare for that he's going to be covering the next day. And he's just, all he's doing is he's taking a bit of time. He knows that Ian would appreciate a chat. Ian would appreciate someone reaching out to him right now. And that's what I'm going to do. And maybe I'm only there for half an hour. Maybe I'm there for an hour. But that's what I'm going to do. And it's those small acts that we do, that we give to each other, which mean so much. I'm glad as well that you've spoken about how cricket is sort of your means of being able to sort of not channel but deal with your grief. It just struck me as interesting that it was county cricket, because bluntly there won't be many other people in the ground as you're at those games. And was that what you were thinking? Is, yes, I'll go to these county games, because bluntly I just don't want to talk to anyone else.
Absolutely, Matt. It was I'm a football man by trade. You know, football writing was my thing. I've written lots of books on football and with footballers, and I've been on national newspapers for 35 years until latterly. But football didn't feel right to me. I didn't want to go and sit amongst crowds of people all slagging off a referee in my ear. You know, I couldn't think, I couldn't process. Cricket felt to me, you had all day for a start. You could rock up at 11 and stay till 6:30, 7 o'clock. So it filled a day. In your sadness, it filled a day. The sort of cadences and nuances and rhythms kind of reflected stuff that was going on inside me. It was never, you know what? I remember going to Scarborough, and I went to Scarborough years and years ago with Vicky. And we always said, we're going to go back and watch Yorkshire during Scarborough week. And we never got round to it. And on the final day, I went into a shop and I saw a jacket I liked and I bought it. And the woman said to me, what's happening in the cricket? And I bought the jacket because I'd bought a jacket in Scarborough with Vicky 10, 15 years earlier. She said, what's happening at the cricket? And I said, it's very hard to describe, but a lot has happened, very little has happened, and today we'll decide. And she said, okay. And that was how it was. And it turned out to be the most amazing game, because Yorkshire beat Surrey in the last half hour. It was a great game. But With cricket, you could sit there, you could overhear conversation. Some of the conversation is great, you know, people's little earfuls of conversation, and that was lovely. And you know, there's always food on hand as well. You don't have to, you know, pack a lunch or whatever. You can just get food and tea, and you can have a whole row to yourself if you want, or you can be sat a few. You know, in those days, you could even sit next to someone. You're not allowed anymore, of course. Not the grounds are open. But that's what was lovely about cricket. There was a review of the book in the Times Literary Supplement the other week, and the reviewer made a very good point that I hadn't even I'd not even noticed. I went to Leicester v Gloucestershire, and because Vicky had worked in Bristol as well, and she'd been a student in Leicester. And I watched this partnership for a whole day almost, that was like, it was a record partnership for Gloucestershire. And the reviewer pointed out that I was attracted by a long partnership, having just lost someone in a too short a partnership. And I thought, oh my God, there's something there that I wasn't even aware of myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could talk to you all day, and this is an outstanding book, just an outstanding book. I want to ask you for your pick, Ian, of a sports book that you love, perhaps one that you recommend to people. Which one would you recommend that we pick out?
Gosh, do you know, I found a piece of writing of Vicky's a few weeks ago in which she was asked to do that, and she picked The Miracle of Castel Di Sangro.
It's a popular pick.
Yeah, right? I tell you what I'm going to go for, which has always been my favourite sports book. It's John Harding's biography of Billy Meredith. Football wizard. Billy Meredith was just the most astonishing figure. He was one of the founders of the PFA. He played for Manchester United and Man City, played in a cup semi-final at the age of 48, Welsh international, huge. Was banned, actually, for allegedly offering a bribe to someone, though I'm never quite sure. No one really knows. But John Harding's book is this amazing social document, really, of one of the great characters. He was Beckham and Cantona rolled into one. He was almost the first number seven for Manchester United at the turn of the 20th century. Wonderful book, beautifully researched, some amazing photos and drawings in it. So that's my pick, John Harding, Football Wizard.
Ian Ridley, many thanks. The Breath of Sadness, an excellent contender for the William Hill Sports Book of the Year 2020. Ian, many, many thanks.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
Goodness me, what a book. The Madness of Grief is what stands out from what Ian has just been talking about. This book absolutely knocked me sideways. I'm also struck by something he mentioned there, that he didn't set out to write a book. In fact, his words there, that he couldn't string a coherent sentence together. And I'm sure that's a sentiment that many of us have shared this year. Goodness me. Right, let's talk to one of our judges. In fact, let's talk to the chair of our judges, Alison Rudd, who those of you who are fans of sports writing will definitely know Alison's name, because she's such a prolific writer, particularly in the Times. But you will also have read her book, AstroTurf Blonde, which obviously talks about her experience in sports journalism. Let's hear from Alison Rudd. What is your go-to recommendation then, as far as sports books are concerned, Alison?
Well, it changes a lot, but right now, if you were to ask me, bump into me in the street, I would say, please read Rough Magic by Lara Pryor Palmer, which was a shortlisted book last year. It's about, basically, it's just about a young woman who decides to do the most ridiculous thing and compete in the Mongol Derby, which requires you to plant yourself on top of horses you've never met before, you're not sure they even can move, and the people she meets and the rough terrain and the beautiful terrain she encounters. The reason I recommend it is because I think it would appeal to somebody who even positively hated sport. It's just a very beautifully written book. It's very poetic, but it also would appeal to someone who absolutely adores sport, because it gives really unusual insight into the competitive spirit. Lara herself is a sort of almost an accidental hero, but she meets people who are hugely competitive, and so she gives you an insight from that point of view. I just defy anyone who doesn't like good writing to enjoy it, and I would imagine that somebody who thought, no, probably the last place I'll go browsing online or in a bookshop is in the sports section, they could find this and almost enjoy it without knowing they're reading a sports book. But like I say, I would like to stress that if you love sport, you would also love it as well. So it's a book for anybody who just enjoys good writing.
It definitely is. So I was at the awards last year, and I hadn't read any of the shortlisted books at that point. And I saw the interview that she gave at that time, and it was the one book I went out and bought, but based on the subject matter, because I just thought, this is amazing. I've never seen or read that kind of book before. Can you remember the first sport book you read that really hit you, Alison?
It's hard to know for an absolute fact, because time plays tricks on the memory, doesn't it? But I think the first sports book that blew me away, and I bored everybody with, you've got to read this, have you read this? And I ended up buying copies just so I could lend them, and that's how much I loved it, was
wow.
The Miracle of Castel de Sangro by Joe McGuinness, which is everything again. It's multifaceted. So it's about sport, it's about the madness of Italian football, I suppose, but he was... he just spent 2 years in American abroad. So it's sort of like travel writing. It's also offering insight into team dynamics as an outsider. And it's also incredibly funny and incredibly moving. And almost one of those books where you think, as you're turning the page, you think, is this real? It's utterly remarkable. The characters he meets, the things that happen to him, very scary flights in planes. I mean, it's just... utterly remarkable, and I loved it so much. I think I made an excuse to have to interview him because he's quite reclusive. But I just needed to contact him to tell him basically that it was one of those probably the first book that really totally blew me away.
Regular listeners to the podcast will wonder whether we are on commission for the number of times that book has been mentioned. It's a personal favourite of mine. I've lost count of the number of times I've recommended it to other people. It's a great, great book. A favourite former winner, what would be your choice there?
It used to be, until the 2018 winner, so it used to be Provided You Don't Kiss Me by Duncan Hamilton. That's just one of those feel-good books about a young reporter. It's first of all, it's Duncan Hamilton's first book, and it's the one where he really taps into his passion for sport, and you learn about him as a very young cub reporter, learning his craft, covering Nottingham Forest and dealing with Brian Clough, who was either amazing or horrid. And it's, again, a very funny book, but offering a lot of insight and very well written, and one that, you know, every judge on the panel that year just adored. So it was a very easy year to pick a winner. And I just can't imagine anyone not enjoying it. But I think I might have shifted now to my favourite previous winner being A Boy in the Water by Tom Gregory, which was a co-winner in 2018. Because it stayed with me, and again, it's a book I recommend a lot. I recommend it to anyone who swims. It's about basically the weird story of a boy who wasn't very athletic at all, wasn't even a particularly good swimmer to start with, and he manages to cross the channel. And you just it's always a fight against the elements, a fight against it being seemingly impossible, but what good training and sort of slightly strange training will do for a young athlete. But it's not, I wouldn't call it like beautifully written, but it's very honestly written and very evocative of the period, and just really sticks to you. There's a terrible sadness, and I finished it on a plane ride, and I found I was crying. I was crying in public. So it definitely had an impact, and everyone I have recommended it to says they love it as well. So maybe that is now my current favourite previous winner.
Wow, excellent. Okay, so what do you look for when you're judging this prize? What are the sort of criteria you're looking for?
Well, as chair of the judges, I don't really judge. I'm only there to make sure things go swimmingly, and nobody, make sure everyone behaves themselves, and that every book gets a good airing when we come down to the nitty gritty of discussing the short list, and also I suppose I make sure that the long list is a fair reflection of books that have been published in the year and no one gets overlooked. Well, while I was a judge, and so I would have, I'd be arguing for books, I would look for... Mind you, I'm going to give you a list now of what I'd look for. I'd be amazed if anyone would say, oh, I look for completely different things. I mean, this makes perfect sense to me. I look for a book that makes impact. I want good writing. I want an ability to entertain. I want it to be able to entertain people who might not know much about the sport or possibly even not like the sport that's under discussion. And I need... It's nice if a book... Yes, informs you about things you don't know and gives you insight into what it takes to compete in that sport. But they have to do it in a... There's a way to do that that could be quite dull. You know, you could go into the nitty-gritty of your routine, your training and so on. Well, that's not enough, is it? You need to be able to make the reader feel what it's like to have run in those conditions, for example, or compete in an area where things went wrong, or to understand what it feels like to be in the zone. You know, everyone refers to being in the zone. If that's going to appear in a book that's going to make the shortlist for the William Hill Sports Book of the Year, they need to be able to explain what that means without using cliches. But sometimes the balance shifts, and sometimes there'll be a year where a book is important. So it might not be that well written, but it raises an issue that is topical or needs airing. It could be, you know, drug abuse or any sort of abuse or problems with mental health or whatever it is. And you have to navigate that path. So so the list I've just given you is a sort of all other things being equal. Unless a book has great merit in terms of what it's going to achieve in maybe changing policy in sport, for example, I would otherwise prefer it to be very well written. I think some judges, that's not quite as important to them, but it is to me.
If we were to come to your house, Alison, and look through your bookcase, is there a sport or a theme that would, as far as sport books are concerned, that would feature more than any other?
Well, because I've been involved in the award for so long, I think it's 14, 15 years. I've therefore got a wide range of books because I'm sent lots of them and they come from all corners of sport. So I think if you took a cursory look, you wouldn't really see a bias to one sport. But I suspect if you went around, and I have a lot of bookcases in my house, if you went around and counted every single book and then made a little log of what they were about, there might be a marginally more on football, but that would probably be because people have bought me books on football for Christmas because I do like football. But there's a broad range, and I'm really glad about that, because the best thing about an award like this is that it opens your eyes to the beauty and passion in other sports. It's a bit like people who only read one newspaper. That's a bit silly. You should make sure you read different newspapers and get different angles on the world. Otherwise, you know, you what's the point of being alive? So I like to know about sports that I don't particularly love and I haven't covered in great detail, but I like to. It's a joy to open a book about something that might even seem a little obscure and find yourself absorbed. And we've done that a lot on this award. I mean, surfing gets a lot of attention from it, and that's not even a sport, perhaps, arguably.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Is there a sports writer, Alison, that you will always read? Who, you know, they could be writing about anything and you will always pick up their books?
Not particularly in that sense. But I mean, you would always always look at a book by Duncan Hamilton or Donald McRae simply because they've won this award a lot. And that's not a coincidence. They are very fine writers who absolutely adore their subjects and write beautifully. So I would always assume I'm going to get good quality writing from them. But there's part of me that thinks that anybody could have an excellent sports book in them. And I do get a kick from an unknown writer or an unknown collaboration and just seeing how it works. So I would, although, yes, I would, there are writers you'd say, well, they've got a track record, they're going to be good. I would never not look at a book because I hadn't heard of the writer or I hadn't heard of the sports person. I would always give it a chance because you just... Sport is about such depth of emotion and passion that I think if someone's got one story they want to tell, it could be dynamite, and it might be the only story they can tell. It might be a complete one-off. The Boy in the Water, I mean, that is a complete one-off. I think the author just works in the city now. He's not going to write another book about what it means to compete day in, day out. But, so you know, there'll always be a book from someone who has the passion. So I think just to start wanting to write your sporting story, I think you've got to give them a chance. But yes, to answer your question, some people have obviously nailed it and know how to write a jolly decent sports book.
Goodness me, the number of times Duncan Hamilton and Miracle of Castel De Sangro by Joe McGuinness come up. They come up all the time. If you've not read their works, my instinct is at the end of this series of podcasts, you're going to want to pick them up because they're clearly worth your time. Right, we have one more shortlisted book to go in our series here. That's going to be coming next week. And if you've been following this closely, you will know it involves someone who's currently on the run for his life in America. It's Dr. Grigory Rodchenkov. So, I would recommend listening next week. That's all I'll say on that one. A very, very strong shortlist. I know I say this every week, but it's absolutely true. These podcasts really serve as tasters for you. If you've enjoyed the chat with the writer, then hopefully you'll pick up the book. But they are definitely worth your time. As I say, hit subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. And that way, future episodes will just drop onto your device straight away. If you could give us a review as well, that always helps. But we are only interested in 5-star reviews. Anything less than 5 stars, don't bother. But please do recommend this to your friends if you're enjoying it. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week for our final shortlisted title for the William Hill Sports Book of the Year 2020.